Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Adam Bakhtia, and once again, my co-host Julie Yu is not with us today. Lucky girl's on a break, well-deserved one nonetheless. But filling for her, as always, is the tireless Deputy Chief Editor of Digital News, David Bottomley. David, it's great to have you again today.
Thank you very much, Adam.
You know, David, I know you're a super busy man. Getting the content onto Channel News Asia's webpage, and it can be a daunting task with so much out there to report. But, you know, I noticed last week, before the cryptocurrency podcast, we were talking about soccer with David Kuo, and I noticed how energetic you were in that conversation. So I thought it would be a fun topic for today if we talked about the importance of the FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, just hold your horses there for a minute, Adam, right. Because you said we were talking about, I was talking about it with David Kuo, and you were trying to sound knowledgeable about football and really failing rather dismally,
well,
I thought.
I did try. I mean, I've got to be honest, I can barely kick a ball. Never been able to, not even in school, but I suppose with 32 nations competing in 64 matches, it's impossible to ignore what is one of the biggest sporting events around the world.
That's right. We're, of course, talking about the World Cup, which is being held in Russia. And the host country, it was something of a controversial choice. You may recall it was awarded the rights to the event by FIFA in 2010 in a vote that was somewhat tainted by allegations of bribery.
That's right. But FIFA Ethics Committee investigation has cleared the Russians of any wrongdoing, though I must say that's despite having limited evidence gathering powers and no access to Russian computers that were used in its campaign that were destroyed, apparently. So whatever the case, Russia has spared no expense at all in preparing for this World Cup.
And that's really something of a massive understatement. It has spent more than $14 billion, most of which has gone into new stadiums, accommodation and transport infrastructure, making it the most expensive World Cup of all.
And now that's certainly a lot of money. $14 billion, taxpayers must be wondering if, you know, they're going to see the bang for their buck, so to speak. But based on past figures, around 3 billion people tuned in to watch the last two World Cups, and that's almost half the world's population. So one could argue that the publicity is priceless.
Indeed. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about whether the publicity really delivers a bang for its buck with some experts. And we're going to be discussing the power of branding at the World Cup, not just for Russia, but for all those companies and businesses that have invested big bucks in marketing and advertising around the event. With us, we have Regina Yeo, adjunct senior lecturer at the NUS Business School, who specializes in marketing, and Lars Verdisch, principal consultant and managing director of Precious Communications, who is a passionate football player, supporter of his hometown's Bundesliga team, and a former radio sports journalist in Germany. Lars, let me start with you first. We spoke about the billions of people who are obsessed with the World Cup. Does that mean that there are incredibly good marketing and advertising opportunities for companies who are associating themselves with the event?
Obviously, the Football World Cup is one of the biggest platforms you can imagine to reach that kind of audience, right? Mm. What other events in the world do you have to get your brand in front of so many people? So it's an amazing platform if you have a brand that is mass compatible, right? So it's a lot of consumer brands, it's image building, it's a platform where you have positive images in general. It's happy people living out their passion. It's about values of sportsmanship. It's a great platform that has grown and is appreciated by brands for a long time now.
Well, they say, you know, sports is a uniting, or should be a uniting factor. But, you know, Russia has been caught in so many controversies in terms of its foreign relations, what's happening in Syria, the involvement in state-sponsored doping at the Olympics. Is it likely that this World Cup will improve Russia's image? Will it even matter?
I believe so, because it takes away the focus on the negative topics that might come up by the critical journalists in the lead up. But once the tournament right now is rolling, people focus on the football. And all they hear is Russia is hosting, the games are getting along well, you have full stadiums, everybody's saying they're having a great time, the weather so far has been amazing. So it's that happy-go-lucky kind of image that you get, and all the negative topics are kind of disappearing.
Regina, let's bring you at this stage. Yeah. Lars has painted a very rosy picture of just how good the event has been so far.
Yes.
Does that mean that all those organisations which are using the event
yes.
for branding and marketing purposes
yes.
are rubbing their hands with glee and thinking, yes, this is just what we were looking for?
Obviously, they hope so. I mean, if the media could also showcase Russians, the hospitality of Russia, the food, the culture. In fact, some of the brands, what they're doing, they're also trying to connect football with fashion, football with food, football with the people, right? So it's also a plus for the brands who are sponsoring the game as well, see? Yeah.
And Regina, how has the sponsorship changed by these big multinational corporations from, let's date back to the FIFA corruption scandal
yes.
from then till now? I mean, have we actually seen any changes? Because back then, I'm sure there were many multinational companies that were quite appalled at what was
yes.
going on and wanted to pull out. But have we seen a change in sponsors from World Cup to World Cup?
Definitely. You see some changes because of the scandal, FIFA scandal in 2014, 2015. You see some major sponsors pulling out, like Sony, Johnson & Johnson and Castrol. So some of the Western brands are fearful. They have what's known as the brand transference theory of being negatively impacted or associated with FIFA or with Russia. So quite a few brands hesitate in sponsoring or coming in as a corporate sponsor for World Cup 2018, actually. Yeah.
Lars, did that diminish or dampen the enthusiasm for the sport, though, when you hear the numbers of people that watch or tune in to FIFA or even attend those matches?
Of course, people are a little bit appalled by what's going on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, if you're passionate about a team, about sports, then you try to not get affected by that. What you want to have is a platform where you can see them compete, where your team can shine or fail. That's the beauty of it. And that's the beauty also of platforms like a World Cup or leagues like the Bundesliga. As a sponsor, if you get engaged with them, you're supporting general fashion for a sport or a league, and you're not that much at risk as if you would, for example, just support one player or one team. So in general, the platforms like World Cups, Euro Cups, or leagues are still very attractive for brands.
So what's the decision-making process when a brand is thinking about associating itself with a big global event like the World Cup? Do they sit down in a darkened room and think, well, on the upside, the World Cup is going to get lots of eyeballs,
yes.
it's going to have a huge profile, and there may be lots of happy pictures of players celebrating and fans celebrating, but on the downside, some of the problems which you mentioned,
correct.
Regina,
yes.
In terms of the corruption and the scandals,
correct.
And the potential for crowd violence, for example. Mm. So is it a kind of a pro and con weighing up the balances before making a decision?
Of course. I think the days where the CEO says, I love football, so we're doing that, or I love rugby, and that's why we're supporting the Rugby World Cup, are over. It's a business decision. It's about opportunity costs. It comes at a cost. What else could I do with the money, and what's my objective? Do I want general brand awareness? Do I want to be associated with passion and emotions with the risk of something that can go wrong, of course?
If I could add on, actually, this is what Adidas did. I think the current campaign for the World Cup is called Creativity is the Answer, and they actually cobbled a team of 58 creators, actually, right? And they launched like a teaser ad of sorts. So it was called the Here Are the Creators. That was launched in December 2017. So these creators, they are creators in their established fields, so musicians, producers, like Pharrell Williams. They had Kylie Kloss, supermodel. They had the football players. So they were all sitting like around a round table of sorts, and then they appear to be like brainstorming. They seem to be like seeking an answer, but without specifically mentioning what the problem was or what the question was. So they talked about it, then that's how the campaign went. Now, fast forward 6 months later, so in June 2018, right, when the campaign for World Cup was launched, and then the campaign tagline was Creativity is the Answer. And it was a worldwide campaign. And I thought it was very, very clever because they localized it. So it's a global brand, but they tweaked it here and there. And then I think they identified six key regions, right? And in whatever the respective regions, they showcased some of the faces of these 58 creators that is unique, specific to whatever the regions that they come from. So in that sense, it's localized for the regions.
That's a great point that you're making, because all these kind of sponsorships, it's not just about getting your logo logo in front of billions of people. Mm-hmm. It's how you activate it. There's a rough guideline in marketing. Whatever you spend on the sponsorship, you should spend the same amount on the activation. Mm-hmm. So if a company like DHL would sponsor the Formula One in a comparison, right. It's all about, can I bring my top clients to the event? Do I give them experiences they wouldn't get? In the Football World Cup, again, it's about getting the tickets to those very rare tickets and experiences for those VIP treatments for your prospects, for your clients, these things, or like fan activation, yes. or my customer activations, getting limited edition balls or football boots, or McDonald's has been supporting the World Cup for a long time, to get away from that fast food image to sports and being happy.
So clearly, it's a huge investment. If you really want to utilize the opportunity effectively, you've got to be spending vast sums of money. And I wonder how you measure whether the return on investment is worthwhile. I mean, is it even possible, or do you just have to hope for the best and hope your branding has been improved and sales might go up a bit? How do you look at it?
Hope is a risky strategy.
Especially when you're spending that kind of money.
Well, religions are built on that, but that's a different story. Okay. So what it is about is really thinking about what do you want to get out of it. Is it about brand awareness? You can measure, did your brand awareness improve? Do more people know your brand? Is it a favorable brand? So you can look about your brand values. What is your brand associated with? So do you want to connect certain emotions with it? So that's on the top kind of sales funnel approach. But you can also go down. Do your sales increase because, for example, you have special World Cup promotions? Adidas, because you talked about it earlier on, is actually the Adidas shares dropped after Germany lost its opener against Mexico.
Ooh.
Because it's about selling jerseys,
yes.
And shoes and whatever. If the World Cup winner is not with Adidas, Adidas sales might not be where they should be. And Nike might win, or Puma, or somebody else.
Well, also to be fair, Adidas shares have rallied a lot in 2017 yeah. and 2018. They've done very, very well, I mean, irrespective of who, you know, which marketing campaign they're on. But Regina, I want to ask you this as well. You know, when you talk about these big multinational brands that are looking
yes.
for brand awareness that Lars was talking about, or
yes.
they want something more out of it, you know, talk to us about the shift in Chinese sponsorship. I mean,
okay.
the Chinese have been very zealous when it comes to picking up football teams across England and in fact, across Europe. They've spent hundreds of millions
yes.
of dollars on this. You know, have we seen them emerge as major sponsors in FIFA World Cup?
Yeah, I think the amount, about what, 39% thereabouts in terms of sponsorship fees in Russia World Cup 2018. And one of the reasons is also because of the president.
He loves football.
So he has actually ignited this interest, and because of the government support, you see the businesses coming in, and I think it's their way of dipping their toes into the game, because they are actually looking into wanting to bid for the 2030 or 2034 World Cup, actually. Yeah, eventually. So what better way than to start, you know, getting a sense of how the game actually works and all
and
that.
And the other things are, for one, it's before this World Cup, it was really tough to get actually a sponsorship
yes.
ticket access. Just because of the corruption scandal, some dropped out. So not all sponsorship
yes.
packages were actually sold. So it was actually an opportunity that wasn't there before for brands, for example, from China to get access to that opportunity.
So it's actually a good thing for them, actually, to not to be a blessing in disguise.
The other thing is, of course, building a brand globally. But if you look at one of the sponsors like Mongolian Milk, you can't even buy it in most parts of the world. But if you look at just the numbers, the World Cup will attract about 300 million Chinese watching the World Cup.
Yes.
So some of the advertising power or sponsorship power that Chinese brands put into the World Cup is a domestic play.
Right.
Because you reach 300 million people on a global scale. So the brand equity goes up because somebody like Mongolian Milk is seen first by 300 million Chinese on a global scale. So suddenly it makes it feel like it's a global proud brand.
So I can understand the value of such branding and marketing for consumer products, even if it's like Mongolian Milk and isn't a global product that can be bought anywhere. But I'm a bit confused about what is the value for organisations which perhaps don't have a consumer brand. I was watching the Denmark-France match and it was so tedious, I was paying more attention to the advertising hoardings at pitch side, and I noticed that Gazprom had a very significant presence on the advertising hoardings next to the pitch. What is the value of being associated with the World Cup for a company like that, which perhaps isn't offering a product for the individual to purchase? What is the purpose of a presence of a company like that?
If you look at Gazprom, for example, they're also sponsoring football teams like Schalke in the Bundesliga. It's about building a bit of goodwill, positive brand equity. Because if you look in, for example, in Europe, Gazprom is involved in massive energy deals that are under scrutiny in the public eye because of Russia's image. So at the same time, if you as a B2B company are associated with giving something to the society, happy faces, great moments, football, you're buying a little bit. It's not everything that comes from Russia is bad kind of, yes, of balance.
Okay. Regina, do you expect to see competition with some of these big branded multinational companies, whether no matter what industry they're in, to be competing for these marketing sponsorships, deals at FIFA, now that the Chinese want to get in on the act?
Yeah, definitely. If it's not, say, at corporate level where they support a national team, sometimes what they do is then they compete to fight to sponsor, say, the individual players. So I think the competition is definitely there. And how can we one up over our next rival, see?
Sure. Now, Lars, at the start of this conversation, you painted a lovely picture of just how wonderful the World Cup has been, with the lovely weather and the wonderful pictures of the fans celebrating and that kind of thing. But the World Cup, just as with any big global sporting event, has the potential for negative headlines as well. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there's been no significant crowd trouble thus far, but it still could happen. And there is always the potential at such events for problems with transportation and infrastructure. The headlines can sometimes be a little bit negative. When that sort of eventuality happens, is there firefighting involved from the brands associated with the event? Do they suddenly think, well, we don't want to be quite so associated with this event. We're going to turn off some of our branding. We're going to pull back from really being very gung-ho about our association with this event.
All brands that take sponsorship serious have their plans in the drawer on what can go wrong and what would be the appropriate reaction. First of all, you distance yourself from what went wrong. We are supporting the idea, we are supporting sportsmanship, we are supporting togetherness, having a good time. But we not supporting what happened there. And we're sorry about what that happened. But it has to be something really significant that you would on the spot withdraw your banners from the stadiums. But I'm pretty sure that all the big brands have their plans in the drawer. That's typical crisis communications, yes, right? Crisis communications like health insurance. It's too late to apply for a new plan after you broke a leg.
How significant would the event have to be, Regina, for a brand to actually suffer as a result of being associated with a particular event?
I think it depends very much on the severity of the event as well. And we're also looking at consumers now who are very much into responsible branding and brand consumerism. It's all about ethics and ethical marketing. If I can draw an example to, say, Pepsi's and Kendall Jenner's case, there was a huge public backlash because of the campaign that she did and all that. So that was a negative impact then on Pepsi. Like what last mentioned, I think brands have to dissociate themselves, all right, and say that, state that, okay, we are sorry this happened. We didn't think that it was like that. This was not our intention at all, right? And hopefully they move forward. Yeah.
But that's back to my point that I made earlier about that's why it's still safer to associate yourself with a platform like a World Cup or a league than just one team or even, yes, one player. Because that one player might just do something wrong and you don't have a fallback. If it's a team said, we're supporting the team, they had one black sheep, but it's still that. If it's the World Cup, that team did something or that person did something, but generally we support the idea. So the risk, it's risk management, right?
You mentioned players there. That's something which we haven't touched on thus far. We've been speaking mostly about companies and corporate branding. But this must be a wonderful event for the top players to improve their marketability and branding as well. What is the value of being a player who's scoring goals and winning matches on behalf of their team?
I think Nike just doing this partnership with Ronaldo, $1 billion lifetime sponsorship. So it's not just about brand sponsorship now, it's also about brand partnership, and you want him to engage his followers, and I'm not surprised why they approached him, because he has about like close to 600 million followers actually across the three main social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and so it's a huge thing. So of course it's good for Ronaldo then.
Sounds like a great opportunity for these soccer stars, football stars, to boost not just their brand awareness but really their pockets as well, right, Lars?
Yeah. Absolutely, and I believe what has changed over the years was originally it was a platform for the first time, or only one of the many, very few platforms where people could become global stars. They shine. But we have so many competitions, the regional cups. You have the every 2 years you have the Euro Cup, or then the World Cup, you have the Olympic Games, you have the Champions League. So I don't think the World Cup is a platform where stars are born anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a platform where stars can shine. So that's the ones that already created a brand, like a Ronaldo, can even amplify his brand power. But it's not like when we had Pele, who basically came to world stardom through the World Cups. I think those days are a little bit over. But it's everybody's looking, and that's interesting if you look at economics of sports. A lot of clubs are waiting to see if the people that are on their wish list are performing or not. Mm-hmm. To then make the buying decision. So the whole kind of transfers this season have been either done long before the World Cup started or are done directly after the World Cup. And for players, it's so much pressure because their individual value goes up or down.
Yes.
Or they can get injured and then no club wants to buy them anymore. Mm. It's a big, big pressure point for a lot of players, and those that a lot of times were kind of hyped to be the next star actually fail and crumble because there's just too much pressure on them. If you look at the World Cup in Brazil, when Germany was crushing Brazil in the semifinal, 7-1, I think it was just too much pressure on the Brazil team. It was home turf. It was 100,000 people. It was their moment to shine. But you saw them crying while the national anthem was played. It was just too much psychological power that they couldn't then bring on the pitch.
Lars, I think it was a little insensitive of you to bring up that result. And I note that it was a German thrashing which you're bringing up there. I think we'll have to leave it there. So thanks very much to all our guests. Regina Yeo, Adjunct Senior Lecturer at the NUS Business School, and Lars Verdish, Principal Consultant and Managing Director of Precious Communications.
And folks listening in, if you like this podcast, please share it, rate it and subscribe to it for comprehensive coverage of business and political news. Make sure you catch Julie and I on Asia Business First every Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time on Channel News Asia. And it's also available on our video on demand section on channelnewsasia.com website. Join us again next week. In the meantime, catch us on TV.